This season of the Mum Break podcast is brought to you by Bathorium, Canada's favorite clean and green beauty bath products. They make all-natural bath bombs, bath soaks, bubble baths, and accessories with no artificial fragrances or toxins. And they're vegan and ethically produced. To get 15% off, go to mumbreak.ca/bath.
Welcome to the Mum Break podcast, a place where you can feel normal, get helpful information, and laugh your ass off, hopefully without peeing your pants. I'm your host, Erica, and I have two kiddos. I am not a mom expert, but I do have a zillion hours of therapy under my belt and no filter. I'm on my own journey to find happiness, and I want to help you on the way to yours.
Birth story part two. Okay, I'm recording this on a Friday afternoon, and I've clearly gone crazy. I am at full capacity for everything. Kids, family, partners. Actually, my things and my friends are going wonderfully. Work. Everything is just full on. So I, full disclosure, I am going a little bit nutty, and this birth story will be fun. I 2 weeks ago, or whenever you're listening to this in the world of the podcasting, have shared my story about Aubrey. You can go back and check out the episode. It's two before this. Now, Aubrey is my first kid. At the point of recording this, she's five and a bit. And I'm going to talk to you all about Austin because I am a dweeb when it comes to Austin's birth story. And he is now 2.5, I think. So, yes, I'm going to tell you all about birth story number two because birth story number one is full of just sort of like random stuff of epidurals not working, of having random things that have drastic consequences and turning into a high-risk pregnancy at the last minute, and just a quick, fiery, fast, scary, exciting, painful AF birth. Like all good birth stories, right? Like they're all hilarious. So Austin's is totally completely different, and the only thing that it has in common is that I was induced for both my pregnancies, both my deliveries, both my babies. He was born at 38 weeks and he was induced, and he was, I want to say 7 pounds something. I honestly don't know. Again, I should probably ask my husband. I'm not a hugely sentimental person. I'm sentimental about weird things, but for the most part, like, kids' crafts go straight in the garbage. Unless they are, like, as an example, sometimes daycare will go out of their way to create nice crafts as a gift on behalf of the kids for moms. Those don't go in the garbage. Those go in a box that'll deal with in, like, 10 or 20 years. But for the most part, any scribbles or paints on paper go straight in the garbage. Whereas I have also, on the flip side of things, kept every single card anyone's ever bought me, and it goes into a big box of cards. So I'm kind of not sentimental at all, but weirdly I have moments where it's like irrationally sentimental. So I don't know how big my son was when he was born. He was an average size baby, very average. But he was born at 38 weeks and he was induced. And, oh my God, biggest dweeb ever, because I spent so much of my pregnancy throwing up with Austin and chasing after a toddler that I completely forgot the most important thing I could possibly do for delivery. And I talked about this in another podcast, but it's just so dumb. I forgot to tell them that I'm a hemophilia carrier. So all this to say, my entire pregnancy, I, you know, very pukey. I threw up so much with Austin that I actually got an umbilical hernia because I was puking so much. And then I'm also simultaneously chasing Aubrey around, who was a toddler at the time, and I had really, 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 really bad, those things where your groin hurts. That's groin. Me and my husband have this all the time. I know that I say it wrong, but where basically you walk around, round ligament pain. Yes, I got it. I had really, really bad round ligament pain, enough to the point where I had to go to the ER several times, and I think I associate that with the fact that prior to having Austin, I had hip surgery, so there's a whole bunch of like unresolved random stuff going on down there that's really painful. So I spent my whole pregnancy puking, chasing after a toddler, being super busy and with this horrible round ligament pain. And at the time, I was also working full time and working on two different businesses on the side because I'm a psycho and I don't know why I thought that was feasible. So I was working a lot, pushing myself, and I forgot to tell my OB. Oh, and I was really concerned about cholestasis because I had that for my last one and it makes you high risk. It's super dangerous for the baby. So I was really concerned about itching and I didn't tell her. And again, I'm going to backtrack. I've explained this before, so my apologies if you've already heard this story. But essentially what hemophilia is it's a very, very, very rare blood clotting disorder. It's so rare that doctors really have a hard time, unless they specialize in it, knowing how to manage and deal with people with hemophilia. My dad has hemophilia, and because of it, because of how genes work, women can't have it unless it's like, it's very, like, it's insanely rare. If a woman has it, very, very, very rare. But women are often carriers. So how that plays into the equation is that I can pass it along to any of my children. Aubrey is a carrier now, so she has to now worry about this with her children. But Austin had a, because he's a male, had a 50% chance based on, again, genetics, that he would have it at the same level as my dad. And Aubrey's children, then it goes decreases. Now Aubrey's boys have a 25% chance. So one in every four of her boys will have it. So 50% of my boys, if I have boys, will have it. Now we dealt with I didn't tell anybody. No one knew. No one until I was like 37 weeks pregnant, because I'm a tool. But the reason why is because, again, all of these things that I was doing, but we dealt with this and did genetic testing when I was initially pregnant with Aubrey. We went through all of the phases. We established all the details. I got all the pamphlets. I got all the information. And because she was a female, it didn't affect her or my pregnancy at all. And I just sort of put it and tucked it out of mind, with the caveat that if I did have any future children, the males would be 50% chance of being affected. But it would also affect my pregnancy and specifically delivery. So... brain broken, apparently, not functioning. Baby brain, still a very real thing. 37 weeks. Oh, by the way, doctor. Also, at this point, cholestasis again. Woo. Or at the very least, we think I have cholestasis again because I'm quite itchy. Also, doctor, by the way, I am a hemophilia carrier. People never forget her face. Her jaw just sort of dropped. And I just... endlessly started apologizing, groveling. I'm so sorry. This is, again, this is something that should have been told in the very first appointment, and it should have been tracked all along. But Space Cadet Erica here, did not. And immediately things started happening. I immediately got discharged from her care, not because she didn't want me in her care, but because she didn't have the skill set to be able to deal with hemophilia carriers as mothers. Because there's a very specific protocol that needs to happen, and there's only so many hospitals that are equipped with the tools to be able to deal with it. So she immediately found a new OB for me at 37 weeks pregnant. I was discharged from my OB's care. She gave me her phone number. We talked on the phone a lot while she was sorting this out. She was going above and beyond to find me care. But at this point, I'm 37 weeks pregnant as a hemophilia carrier with cholestasis, and I don't have an OB. So what they did was they found someone at a high-risk hospital in Ottawa. I got transferred from the Queensway Carleton to the General. One is the sort of like high-risk hospital in Ottawa if you're not in the city. And I had to meet my OB for the first time to talk about what would be involved, because it's a very different process and there's a lot of different outcomes. So it's, again, this is something that should have been discussed throughout the pregnancy. But the problem is the only OB that could take me that had this, you know, specific specialization and interests was super busy. So I went to the hospital, and if you remember on stories, you may remember this if you followed along at that point. I went in to go and meet with the doctor. I had an appointment at a specific time, and I ended up waiting in triage, just like pregnant, sitting, waiting for 9 hours for her. And again, not her, not the hospital, totally 100% my fault. But it was, because then of course, then she has patients who are a priority. She's working. She, you know, C-sections, like the babies and the moms come first in that scenario. And so here I am waiting, panicked, freaked out, cholestasis, hemophilia carrier, terrified about how this would look for my pregnancy and my baby, waiting 9 hours in the hospital, toddler at home, now off work. Just like at that point, it's like, just give up, stop working, you're done. Finally met the doctor, wonderful, lovely human, so nice, so supportive. Anyways, all that to say is that she was lovely, shocked. I got into new care. It was great. And given everything that was happening, we decided to do another induction just so that we can control what happens. What I learned is that when you're delivering as a mother who potentially has a hemophiliac child, there's a lot of different things that need to happen. Number one, you need to get blood work ahead of time. And there's only one place in Ottawa that actually does that blood work. And that's why I was shipped to that hospital. Number two, we have to be really cautious about the way that things are delivered. So on my file, then you can't vacuum out a child as an example, because one of the things about hemophilia is that because you don't clot, anything that could happen to the child in delivery could be catastrophic from the perspective of they don't stop bleeding, things swell, so many different side effects. So if you were, let's say, to vacuum out a child or put needles in, that was another thing on my chart, is that this kid can't have needles. This kid can't be vacuumed out. Like, you can still have the birth and the natural birth, but you can't take any sort of extra measures above and beyond. So all this needed to be really done really carefully. I had to get special blood work done. I had to go to the hematology, I believe it's called, clinic at the center. I had to get all that mapped out, and then I was going to be induced. So actually, I ended up getting, it worked out well. I think my hematology stuff and tests done before meeting the OB, and then had this big long wait at the beat, and then went in for induction. So this was all within a couple days span, and it was very, it was just a little bit nutty. It was a nutty time, let's just put it that way. And it was just, anyways, okay. All that to say, we were all good. I was in the process of then going back home and starting this process again where you wait to get induced. And same thing happened with Aubrey, especially if you don't are, like, I was technically at this point super high risk. My baby was high risk and I was high risk, but I'm not, I still don't warrant being at the top of the list, which is good. It's a place I don't want to be. So we waited and we waited and we waited and we waited and finally ended up going in. We were told it would be, you know, like 7 a.m., but then ended up not going into the hospital induction to like 8 or 9 p.m. So it was a long few days. This time, really cool, I got to try something other than Cervidil for my induction. So if you listened to the last episode, I was induced with Cervidil for Aubrey 3 times and it blew. This time I got to try the like basically the balloon that goes inside you, the Foley cath Foley, whatever it's called. But essentially what they do is they inject you with, stick a little balloon up you, pump it up so that it starts putting pressure on your cervix, and then it starts naturally simulating labor. Cool. If your cervix gets big enough and it falls out, you know you're making progress. So I got it in before bedtime. Nurses were wonderful and lovely, and lo and behold, I woke. We actually, this time, appropriately so, we went to the hospital and we didn't leave, unlike the other time where they kept shipping me home. I'm in, and I'm in there for as long as it takes to have this baby. I am there. I get my bed all set up. I have my Netflix. I'm ready. Like, last time it took me 3 days. I am ready. The cath Foley, whatever goes in, it's kind of awkward. They tape it to your leg. It's like this dangly little thing that just flops down there. It's really awkward. And try to go to sleep, get a couple hours of rest. And when I wake up in the morning to go pee, it falls out. Yay, I'm making progress. All good. So I then transfer rooms a couple times just because of availability and beds and stuff. But the really cool thing about this hospital, which I liked a lot versus the other hospital that I was at, and I know that it's different all across the world and in every city, but at the Queensway Carlton, the hospital I delivered Aubrey at, you basically spend all your time in triage, which is like this sort of big open room with other people laboring as well. And then when you've progressed far enough, then you get to go into your labor and delivery room, and that's where you do the bulk of your work. And then you leave and go into like the mommy and baby unit. But at the general, it was really cool because you just go into one room and you stay there the whole time. You're not really in any state of triage. You just have your room. So it was really relaxing. The room originally I had was really nice. I specifically asked for a bath because I had labored so much with Aubrey in a bath, and it was lovely. I was like, it's going to be the exact same labor. That's how this works, right? No, wrong. I woke up, my cath folly bubble balloon thing was out, all was good. I moved into another room, and then I was given, I want to call Pitocin, I think it is, but it's essentially the drug that stimulates labor. And oh my goodness, what happened first? Essentially, what I explained to the nurses, what happened last time I was induced. And last time I was induced, because essentially when you're induced or you're given Pitocin, you are like rocked into, because your body is being forced into something it's technically not ready to do. You're technically not ready to deliver yet. So you're trying this extreme measure to get this baby out, and your contractions then become insane. So I talked to them about what had happened last time and how it was like this big traumatic experience. And they're like, no need to be a hero. Let's just get your epidural in right away. And so I started the Pitocin, and then so they scheduled my epidural to come shortly after. And I'm so friggin' glad they did, because the Pitocin, and again, I'm sorry, I may be saying this wrong, but I'm just going off the top of my head. Pitocin, I think that's what it is. It rocked me into like super intense, insane contractions every like 15 seconds, almost immediately. It was wild. I was like, thank God we got the epidural scheduled in. I managed to hold my shit together for getting the epidural in. And unlike last time, actually, it's funny. I'm sorry, I need a quick story first. Because at this point in time, the hospital I delivered at was out of epidurals. So what they did is they mixed some random concoction of epidural. And apparently it was this super heavy, super strong dose that just like knocked things out. And it wasn't, I don't know what a normal epidural would feel like. So my first one didn't work, but this one, holy hell, it was wonderful. As soon as it started kicking in, I just felt like on cloud nine. My whole body was able to relax. I just sat there. I couldn't feel a freaking thing. It was glorious. The caveat to that was that I also couldn't feel my legs, and everything was just, so I was stuck in bed now. For however long this takes, it was stuck in bed. And while I was progressing pretty well naturally, well, not naturally, but with the Foley cath or catheter or cath Foley, whatever it's called, and I was starting to make good progress, once I had my epidural, things slowed right down, which is fine, because I couldn't feel anything. So I had, before having, going into labor, I went out and bought myself a treat. I bought some AirPods, like the wireless AirPods, so I could put some music. I made my friend Jenna made me a labor playlist. So I literally just put my music on and like almost fell asleep. It was heaven. At one point though, it was a little bit scary because Austin's heartbeat kept going nuts and spiking, and they had to keep rushing in. So because I couldn't move myself, they had to try, you know, those big peanut balls. Maybe some of you know them, but if you don't, it's essentially picture a peanut and like increase it by 300 times the size. And it's basically a big exercise ball in the shape of a peanut. And you're meant to put it between your legs so that you can shift weight places. So it took the weight off the heartbeat. So I had to be really careful because at this point, Austin's heart was all over the place. It was starting to get a little bit worrisome. But by moving me and by them coming in and moving me, it seemed to really help. Now, well, at this point, everything's going well. I'm progressing. It's really slow. I'm in almost no pain. I'm stuck in bed. I can't move, but I don't really care. They have a strategy for managing Austin's heart, but, and you know, really, like, things are going well. I think it was night. I want to say it was nighttime. It was starting to get late. When did I have him? In the morning? I think it was in the morning. So I slept. I spent the night there. It was, yeah, it must have been the morning because it was nurse change. Whenever nurses change shifts. So I had made friends with my nurse. She was lovely. She was a kind human. And I've told this story before. So if you heard it, I'm sorry. But essentially, at this point, I'm now a full day in. Things are going well. I'm comfortable. I'm just ready to be done. And I feel like I have to poop. I'm like, shit. Every, like, 30 seconds to a minute, I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to poop my pants. What do I do? What do I do? I'm freaking out. I'm stuck on this table. I physically can't move because I have super epidural plugged into my back. And lo and behold, yeah, guess what? I'm having contractions because obviously you're having contractions, but you can't feel them. Every freaking contraction, poop is coming out, but I can feel the poop. But I can't do anything about it. So I'm panicking in my head being like, okay, what do I do? I should call the nurse. I'm going to call the nurse. But then Canadian kind Erica, who doesn't want to put anybody out, realizes that it's the end of the nurse's shift. And she was the loveliest, kindest human being. And the last thing I wanted to do was to put her out and be like, hey, I'm pooping. I'm sorry. This is the thing you have to deal with right now before you go home with after the end of a full night shift. And I'm like, okay, but there's a nurse change. I could get a new nurse. Let me get some help. I'm going to poop on the table, sitting here, not even in labor, literally just sitting here calmly, nothing else is happening, and I'm pooping. And but I'm like, okay, but this new nurse, Erica, do you really want to be like, hey, nice to meet you, I'm Erica, can you come wipe my ass? It occurred to me in that moment, I was so lucid that I didn't want that to be my introduction to this new lovely kind nurse starting off her morning. I just didn't want it. And so I look, I'm like, who else is in this room for me? I looked at my husband, I'm like, hey, Jordan, I'm pooping. Guess what's up? I'm pooping. I'm like, I need your help. I need you to never talk about this again. And I need you to go to the bathroom and get a fucking roll of toilet paper right now. And we're never talking about this again. Of course, I'm talking about this on the podcast with thousands of people, but I'm comfortable with it now. And we can all laugh about it later after the moment. So picture a poop beep test, really, is what it was. It was in between contractions, my husband running to the bathroom to get more toilet paper, because of course at that point you don't think, like, I'm going to grab the full roll because your wife is screaming in labor to wipe her ass. Catch the poop, I'm pooping, and he's rushing around from the bathroom to my butt to catch the poop and then shuttle it back to the bathroom. Then the most horrible moment of my life, well, actually not really, but just being dramatic for the purposes of this story, is when my husband stood mid-poop, and guess who walks in the room? Not one, but two nurses. The nurse closing and the nurse starting the shift, both eyes wide. What is this psycho couple doing? Poop in hand, me frozen and in shock. So awkward and embarrassing. But this is the decisions process, and these are the decisions that I make when I'm giving birth to a child. There is no logic here. There is just the fear of leaving a giant poop on the table while you're fully lucid. It was good times. It was a good time. And I that look of shock, and it wasn't a shock in like a judgmental way. It was like a, I've never seen this before. This is kind of weird. First thing she said to me, I shit you not, is, why didn't you call us? This means you're ready to have a baby. I was like, I am an idiot. And of course, they checked, and I'm like, baby is there, ready to have a baby. So again, I'm laboring by myself. Baby is there, poop all, well, not in the table, because my husband is a rock star and caught it. But I hopefully gave the nurses a little bit of a laugh that day. So all that to say, I'm ready to have a baby. They go collect all the people and things that they need to get this child out. You know, 1 million other student doctors come in and look at my vagina. Totally fine. I don't care. Second child. Who gives a what? Who sees what? And honestly, it was just easy breezy compared to my first epiduralis, induction child. My first epiduralis induction child, where I thought I was literally going to die. this one, it's just like, okay, a contraction's coming. You can push now. I'm like, oh, is it? Sure. Let's push. Four pushes later, Austin was out. They asked me to cut the cord. Things like that grossed me out. I said, no, thank you. They asked my husband to cut the cord. He said, fuck no. And they even asked me if I wanted to pull him out. And in hindsight now, I kind of wish I had, because that would have been a cool story. But I was in that little pain honestly, I'm going to say it. You may hate me, but I don't really care. That epidural was really, really, really good. I could feel the pressure. It was uncomfortable for sure, but compared to the last labor, it was just actually quite relaxing compared to being at home with the toddler. He was out, he was happy, and then the birth story got a little complicated in that in the post-birth, he wasn't breathing. He was quite a sick little boy, and they put him on my chest, took some pictures, and then they immediately rushed him off to the NICU, and that's where he stayed for another week. But I guess that's a whole other thing. And it was one of the most difficult things I've ever done. I can't imagine people who do it long term, but they scooped Austin off, and I didn't see him again for at least a few hours, because of this epic, wonderful epidural that made me not be able to feel anything. Of course, then I couldn't do anything or be mobile, and I had to pee first, and I had to, you know, get up, and I'm still recovering from birth. So they start taking him away, and I remember just looking at Jordan, and I looked at him and I pointed and I screamed. I'm like, follow him. Go. So then I'm standing like bleeding everywhere in the room by myself. So it was not, it was a very different birth story than Aubrey. High level, quick over note of how it turned out. Essentially, I got settled in the mom and baby unit without my baby, which was really, really, really shitty to walk into a baby unit and see the little little hospital style bassinet and be like, there's no baby here. And literally all of the checklists and all of the procedures were built in for mom and baby. So we ended up just skipping all those. And I probably could have been discharged really quickly, but thankfully due to space in the hospital at that time, I ended up staying an extra day or two, and they were able to prolong my stay so that I didn't have to come and go. But I was able to I can't even remember, maybe within a few hours, I was able to then like wheelchair myself over to the NICU to see Austin, poor sick little boy, and then had all of his tubes and stuff. And it's a scary few nights, but he is healthy and he is lovely, and it was totally worth it. But starting with basically me being a goof and not disclosing a super, super, super rare, crazy, scary blood disorder, all the way to beep testing my poop with my husband, all the way to the miracle epidural, which helped curb some of the insane induction pains, to a visit at the NICU. Birth stories are never a dull moment, and every single one is crazy and fun, and I love them. So I love telling them too. And it's funny because mine are so, I find them weird, because I think every story, like every person or whatever, is a little bit different, but it's just, mine have sort of like rare nuances to them, with like the hemophilia and the cholestasis and just like these weird little finicky things that make it a little bit extra complicated, and then the placenta previa, like it was a thing. But I, despite all of this, I know this is hard to believe, maybe it isn't hard to believe, because I think a lot of you probably feel the same as I do, is that I loved giving birth. It's scary and it's nerve-wracking, but it is the most like exciting adrenaline. And that moment when the baby, like when they're little and they're sitting, like there is nothing more special than that moment. And I would give birth 1,000 times over before being pregnant, because I hate being pregnant. I have had horrible pregnancies, so much discomfort, and I almost fall into little mini depressions because I'm so sick for so long. So it's, I love birth. I love it so much, but I'm grossed out by it a little bit. But those are my stories. If you guys have any questions, feel free to reach out. If you enjoyed hearing my poop story and feel like I'm an aura of sharer, please leave some love on my reviews. I do this for you guys. And actually, I also do this for me because this is, I think now that I've figured out the routine of podcasting in a way where it's not, you know, 4 hours an episode and a ton of work and I can just do it for fun and shoot the shit with you guys, it's becoming my favorite way to talk to you guys. So thank you if you're tuning in and listening. You can go hang out with me on Instagram at mum.break or you can leave me a lovely review. That's good too. Whatever floats your boat. Thanks guys. Have a good one. We'll be right back.